Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Tropical Smoothie Cafe welcomes you to Tropic Time. I'll be your concierge. Our beach bites, including made-to-order wraps and bowls, are full of tropic vibes. And our fresh-from-the-blender smoothies make you feel absolutely radiant. It's like a wellness retreat for your taste buds. You're on Tropic Time now at Tropical Smoothie Cafe. Got breakfast plans? At Tropical Smoothie Cafe, hitting your protein goals is a breeze. With our smoothies, bowls, wraps, and diets featuring up to 32 grams of protein.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine & Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of This Week in History. We are talking about Henry VIII's wives in this little mini-series that we're doing. We're on to wife number 4. Probably one of the least known, the least famous, especially when it comes to British history. She's not spoken about very much in regards as the other wives. But she is well known as the first woman ever in history to use a portrait that did not look like her. So we've all been there. We've all been on these dating websites where you click on a woman and you turn around, and or a man, but I'm talking about women here, where they go, do you know what? You don't look anything like your profile picture. And this is exactly what Anne of Cleves was allegedly supposed to have done. Whether she did it or whether it was the artist that did it. But whatever way, when she met Henry VIII, he basically said, you're a lot uglier than what I thought you would be. And that was pretty much the gist of their entire marriage. But we don't know very much about her as a person, where she grew up and things like that. So this is what we're going to talk about today. So Anne of Cleves was Queen of England, and she was Henry VIII's 4th wife for just over 6 months. They weren't married for very long. Now, she has been disregarded by some historians as the ugly one, the subject of the much-discussed portrait by Hans Holbein, and she was a brief footnote in Henry VIII's actual quest to secure his Tudor dynasty. However, there is a lot more to Anne of Cleves than what we actually, you know, what we actually learn, other than she was, in quotations, the ugly one. How did Anne of Cleves' status change from being the king's wife to so-called the king's sister? And not just divorced, Anne survived and even thrived in a cutthroat Tudor court. So she was actually a lot more to her than what met the eye, even though what met the eye probably wasn't that nice to look at. She was born in Dusseldorf in 1515, and Anne of Cleves was the daughter of Maria Julich Berg and John III, Duke of Cleves. Her traditional birth date is thought to be the 22nd of September 1515, although some historians have suggested that a date in June or July may be the more accurate date. Anne had three siblings, a brother Wilhelm and two sisters, Sibia and Amelia. Anne grew up in Cleves in a small state in modern Germany, or modern day Germany, inside the Holy Roman Empire. Despite its small size, Cleves was a prestigious and respected player in European politics. Sadly, we know little about Anne's early life. She was close to her mother, who oversaw her education by preparing her to succeed as a German noblewoman. This was a very different upbringing to most of the women in the Tudor court, and Anne learned to read and write in German, as well as practical household management, such as cooking, needlework, basically general house duties. However, unlike English ladies, Anne did not learn to dance, and she did not learn to play music either. So, which doesn't seem like much, but when you're thinking about, essentially, that was their social life in the English court. You're now talking about a woman coming into the English court, not being able to fraternize, not being able to socialize, and not being able to essentially woo her husband. She's got nothing about her other than she can cook and clean. So, added to that, that she's not the most attractive woman, or allegedly not the most attractive woman, kind of caused a bit of a problem. Now, in 1537, Henry VIII's third queen, Jane Seymour, died after giving birth to Prince Edward, or shortly after giving birth to Prince Edward. Now, this was Henry's long-awaited male and future heir to the throne. However, as we know, one son is not enough for the king. He only inherited his throne. Henry VIII actually only inherited his throne because his older brother died before his father. That was Prince Arthur. So Henry needed a spare. Now they call it in the British court, it's an heir and a spare. So an heir to the throne and one to, you know, come in should that one not make it. And especially in Tudor England, that was a lot more common than what you would think. However, in England, it was politically and religiously isolated at the time. So in 1531, the king had actually broken ties with the Roman Catholic Church and declared himself supreme head of the Church of England. Now, the reason he did this, as we mentioned in previous episodes, was so that he could divorce his first wife, Catherine of Aragon. This religious split left England vulnerable against a new alliance, the new alliance that was building between Spain and France. This was a Catholic alliance. So England was kind of isolated at this point. They didn't really have any allies, kind of where we like to be, really. We kind of like to be left alone. But through marriage, Henry actually hoped to strengthen his position by allying with countries that also challenged the Pope. So the Holy Roman Empire at the time was going through what's called Lutheranism, which was led by a man named Martin Luther. And essentially, it was a challenge, a direct challenge to the Catholic Church. And Germany, or the Holy Roman Empire, kind of led the forefront for this in mainland Europe. The great task for a royal matchmaker fell to Henry's chief minister, Thomas Cromwell, and he eventually set his eyes on Anne of Cleves. Cleves, like England, was a Catholic state open to religious reform. Anne's brother-in-law even led a league of united German Protestant states that challenged the Holy Roman Empire. In Cleves, Cromwell found a country with a similar religious and political outlook to England. Anne, now 23, had been engaged to the Duke of Lorraine since she was 11. However, nothing had come of the match, and her family assured Cromwell that Anne was free to marry. Just to be sure, her younger sister Amelia was also brought into the negotiations. Now, when choosing his future bride, Henry was not prepared to rely on his ambassador's word alone. Instead, the king sent his court painter, Hans Holbein, to create Anne and Amelia's portraits. Holbein was renowned for capturing famous figures in the Tudor court, including Jane Seymour and possibly her predecessor Anne Boleyn. Now his artist's eye was entrusted to paint Henry's next queen. The portrait of Anne that Holbein sent to Henry VIII is thought to be one where she's wearing a red dress. She actually looks quite attractive for a Tudor bride. Very well done. So if you've ever seen a picture of Anne of Cleves, she's got a red dress with gold trimming on it. And with this, there's very rich fabrics, an ornate headdress and fine jewels as well. Some historians note that her fabulous embellished clothes dominate the frame instead of her face. So you pay more attention to the actual clothing and the jewellery and things like that rather than her face. And, you know, she just looks like a normal person in this. You know, I wouldn't say it was anything that bad. You know, she's sort of almost known as the ugly one. So when you think of the ugly one, I suppose you probably think of... I don't know, everyone's got that one person in their head. For me, it's Rosie O'Donnell, and maybe that comes from Donald Trump. But, you know, you think of someone like that, someone who's really not attractive. In reality, she didn't look that bad in the picture. And Holbein's portrait made up the king's mind. Reassured, Henry finally approved the match, and within a few weeks, the fateful marriage contract was signed. Now, we don't know how Anne felt about her engagement to Henry. Their 24-year age gap was not uncommon, but the couple had never met and didn't even speak the same language. Add to this Henry's reputation from his previous marriages, and we might imagine a little bit of apprehension on Anne's part, which is pretty understandable. You know, he's divorced one, he's murdered one, and one of them, who he absolutely loved, died in childbirth. You know, and the other downside that Anne's got is she's essentially the sort of the knockback when it comes to wives. You know, he's just been with the woman of his dreams. He's just been with the love of his life, the woman who meant more to him than anybody else, and the woman that gave him the next heir to the throne. As far as Anne goes, I mean, there's no way you're going to compare with that woman. She's probably got the worst slot out of all four wives, coming after Jane Seymour. Anne left Cleves in the autumn of 1539, and she reached English by Calais on the 11th of December 1539, aged 24. When she waited to cross the Channel, Anne asked through her interpreter to learn one of Henry's favourite card games, and took dinner with her English hosts, perhaps to prepare herself for her new life. Anne arrived in Dover on December the 27th, and she was accompanied north to Rochester. She rested there for a few days before her journey to London, where Anne was told she would finally meet the king. When Henry heard that Anne of Cleves had arrived, he and several gentlemen of the Privy Chamber rode to Rochester to surprise her on New Year's Day 1540. He dressed in disguise, wearing a marbled or coloured cloak, and prepared to meet his new queen. Meetings in disguise were a romantic tradition based in French customs of chivalry. The code of chivalry is essentially a custom that knights were supposed to follow, medieval knights. This tradition was popular with Henry and the Tudor court, and it was meant to demonstrate true love. Essentially, that was the point of it. Now, Anne would have either recognised Henry or been drawn to him instinctively. It was supposed to be love at first sight. Essentially, that was the gist of it, you know. The meeting did not go well. When Henry burst into the room, Anne did not recognise him. Some accounts said that she ignored him or even pushed him away, which is a big insult to the King of England. After their first meeting, Henry was disappointed and told Cromwell that he didn't want to marry her. He hoped that the previous engagement to the Duke of Lorraine might prevent this match. But Anne's advisers insisted that she was free to marry. This kind of left Henry in a bit of an awkward position, and he's anxious not to lose his political alliance with Cleves. Essentially, Henry was stuck. He had no choice but to go through with the marriage. Anne of Cleves married Henry VIII at Greenwich Palace on the 6th of January 1540. Her wedding ring was inscribed with her personal motto, "God send me and keep me well." Publicly, the royal wedding was celebrated with pageantry and splendour, but behind closed doors, the relationship was already in disaster. Things went from bad to worse on their wedding night, and in the morning, Henry was said to have told Cromwell that "I liked her before, not well, but now I like her much worse." And basically, they were not able to consummate the marriage to legalise their union. Now, there are theories as to why this happened. He was older than her. He was not in the physical fitness. He wasn't, you know, that you can put it down to him, or you can put it down to the fact that he just simply wasn't attracted to her. And unfortunately, there's not really much that can happen in that situation. Perhaps recognizing her situation, Anne reportedly tried asking Cromwell for advice in the following months. However, Cromwell was frightened to upset the king, and he refused to see her. He actually said many times, "His Majesty has declared unto him that his nature has abhorred her ever since, so far that if his grace would go about to have do with her, his highness verily thinks that his nature would not consent to do so." Basically, he didn't fancy her, and he wasn't going to do anything about it. Thomas Cromwell wanted to break off the match as soon as possible, and in July 1540, he, Henry, and other eyewitnesses tested to an assembly of archbishops that the marriage was not consensual, at least on Henry's side, and was unconsummated. Anne was not invited to testify. So, it may have been consummated. He is a king of England. This is a 6-month period. It's likely that it probably was. But she wasn't allowed to say anything. She's not allowed a point in this. So it's tough shit. It's what Henry says. Which we kind of got the point of that over Henry's entire campaign as king of England.
Warning. The following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Save big during Labor Day at Lowe's. Get up to 40% off select major appliances. Plus, buy more to get up to an additional 20% off. Shop even more savings with 3 Stay Green 1-cubic-foot vegetable and flower garden soil bags for $10. This Labor Day, take care of your home for less at Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
It was his way or no way at all. Anne of Cleves and Henry VIII's marriage was formally annulled on the 9th of July 1540. And unlike divorce, which was rare in England, even in the Tudor period, an annulment declaring that the marriage had never been valid or binding. So when we talk about the poem that we have in England, or the rhyme, which is divorced, beheaded, died, divorced, beheaded, survived, technically isn't true. It's divorced, beheaded, died, annulled, beheaded, survived. But it doesn't have the same ring to it, so divorce sounds a little bit better. But technically, they were never divorced. The marriage was just written off. It was an annulment. Anne was formally told of the annulment 3 days before its approval, and Henry's officials reported that she heard the news calmly and without any alteration of conscience. She wasn't bothered, basically. Yet, privately, other observers, including Carl Hurst, a diplomat who accompanied Anne from Cleves, told her she was frightened for both her position and her life. She knew what had happened to his previous queens. She discarded Catherine of Aragon and the execution of Anne Boleyn. So she's panicking at this point. You know, this could be the end of her life. She's a 24, 25-year-old woman, and things are a little bit hairy. Other eyewitnesses comforted Anne, recognising that she took the matter heavily, and reassured her that the king meant her no harm. He didn't want to behead another wife. Once the news sunk in, Anne was pretty calm about it, keeping whatever private thoughts and feelings she had to herself, and she wisely accepted the annulment without a fight. Historians have tended to focus on Anne's appearance, and some have accused Holbein's portrait of exaggerating her beauty, since the king said that he was not attracted to her despite initially approving the match. However, while Henry complained that Anne was nothing so fair as hath been reported, contemporary accounts don't accuse Holbein of misrepresenting the king's bride-to-be. In fact, Henry's ambassador in Cleves wrote that Holbein had expressed Anne's image very lively, suggesting his portrait had a pleasing likeness to the real woman. In other words, even the people of Cleves said she probably wasn't as nice as the picture made her look. Henry and Cromwell also used cruel and graphic descriptions of Anne's body to explain why their marriage was unconsummated. These descriptions predictably direct the blame firmly away from the king. After all, questioning Henry's ability to consummate the marriage would have insulted his pride and masculinity, and probably lost someone their head. With some eyewitness accounts, they mocked Anne's foreign clothes and manners. Infamous nicknames such as the Flanders Mare were recorded much later in the 17th century. And instead of Anne's looks, historians have suggested other factors. The couple lacked both personal and romantic chemistry, and this may have been influenced by the bad first impression that was made at Rochester. Added to this, Anne and Henry were separated by language and culture. Anne's upbringing meant that she did not share the English court's love for dance and music. The Catholic alliance between France and Spain had actually faded now. It wasn't going so well, reducing the political importance of Anne and Henry's marriage. The king preferred to choose his own lovers is another one. Henry felt that Cromwell had forced Anne upon him, and his eye had already wandered to Catherine Howard, another woman in the English courts. Grateful for Anne's cooperation and probably avoided conflict with her family, Henry presented his former queen with a generous settlement. Now, the king promised Anne that if she remained in England, she would be granted the honoured title of the king's sister. Anne would be bestowed with vast amounts of property, such as Henry VII Richmond Palace and later Hever Castle, the former childhood home of Anne Boleyn. Anne also received an annual income of £500, which is a lot of money nowadays. It actually translates to approximately £137,349.35 a year, or the equivalent of 105 horses, 400 cows, 1,562 wool or sheep, and 537 quarters of wheat. So it wasn't a little amount of money. You know, she was given a lot of money to stay in England, and she was given jewels. She was allowed to keep everything that she had from court, her jewels, her dresses, everything like that. And she was given two palaces. So she kind of got the good end of the deal. And she was free to do what she wanted. Obviously, Anne accepted. And with Henry's encouragement, she eventually wrote to her family to assure them that she was safe and would not be returning to Cleves. Finally, Anne returned her wedding ring and asked that it be broken into pieces as a thing of which she knew no value. She basically given up all value on it. She was not interested in it. Henry VIII moved on pretty quickly, as we've probably got a bit of a theme here that he does kind of move on pretty fast. And on the 28th of July 1540, the same day that Thomas Cromwell was actually executed, so we can go into that on another episode. I will do an episode on Thomas Cromwell, because we've so far up until 1540, we've kind of made him pretty, you know, pretty well known. He's been pretty powerful in influencing Henry. You know, he's, we don't know, for those of you who don't know, that didn't last. It certainly didn't last. He was executed on Tower Hill on the same day that Henry VIII married his fifth wife, Catherine Howard. Although it wasn't the only reason for his downfall, it speaks volumes that Anne of Cleves survived the crisis, that the most powerful man in England did not. Now, Anne's settlement offered a new kind of freedom. She spent time across her different properties, enjoying fashion, sports, wine. She learnt to dance, she learnt to speak English, and Anne stayed on good terms with the king and became close with his daughters, Mary and Elizabeth. In January 1541, Henry even invited Anne to Christmas at Hampton Court Palace. Reportedly, Anne paid homage to the new Queen Catherine, who was her former lady-in-waiting, and the two danced together when Henry went to bed. So she had a pretty good relationship now with the Tudor court. After Catherine's tragic downfall, there were many rumours that Anne and Henry might remarry. Anne had stayed single since the annulment and remained so for the rest of her life. Some observers and historians have suggested that Anne still considered herself Henry's wife and secretly wished to remain and become queen again. However, others argue that she simply wanted to protect her settlement and independence. After Henry married Catherine Parr, who was his sixth wife, in 1543, Anne continued to be welcomed at the court and exchanged letters with the king and his family. Henry VIII died on January the 28th, 1547, and this meant that Anne was no longer the, in quotations, king's sister, and she moved away from court circles. Financial troubles led her to exchange larger estates for smaller properties, and she settled into a quieter, domesticated life. When Mary I assumed the crown in 1553, Anne attended the coronation of Princess Elizabeth, and Anne's name appears in a few key moments in Mary's reign. Making a rare move into politics, she unsuccessfully suggested to the new queen to marry Ferdinand of Austria, who had close ties to her family in Cleves. Instead, Mary chose to marry Philip of Spain, and this controversial decision helped spark the Wyatt Rebellion, which was a Protestant plot to depose the queen and place her half-sister Elizabeth on the throne. As Mary and her advisers worked to uncover the plotters, rumours cast suspicion on Anne of Cleves, who was particularly a close friend to Elizabeth. Yet, there was little evidence against Anne, who was known as ever the survivor. She was never directly accused of treason, though some historians suggest this incident sourced Anne's relationship with the Queen. The two women stayed outwardly in good terms, and Anne continued to live her life in relative peace and privacy. Anne suffered poor health for several years, and finally, on the 18th of July 1557, She died at Chelsea Manor, aged 41. Mary I sent condolences to Anne's family, who ordered memorial services be held in church and monastery in Cleves. Back in England, Mary and Anne buried with Catholic rites with a great pomp and ceremony near the high altar at Westminster Abbey. This makes Anne the only one of Henry VIII's wives to lie in the traditional resting place of England's kings and queens. Anne's life represents more than just 6 months of an unhappy marriage. In fact, many recent historians point out that she might be the luckiest of Henry's queens. Anne not only escaped the king's attentions unharmed, but as his sister, she enjoyed status, wealth, and independence rarely shared with women of her time. Anne never returned to Cleves, even after Henry's death, which might suggest some satisfaction with the life that she had made in England. Today, Anne's story is retold through the musical that we've spoken about in previous ones of Six, where again she is portrayed as essentially the lucky one. So, Anne of Cleves, the fourth Queen of England, or the fourth Queen of Henry VIII, Queen for the least amount of time, and probably not even really remembered in history. However, I do find it very interesting that Henry VIII had six wives, and the only one to lay in rest at Westminster was Anne of Cleves, the one that no one really remembers, or the one that no one really cares about. I suppose when we talk about the wives, we do remember her because it's a name that you kind of don't forget. But in reality, she's not one that we know very much about, unless we do the research, or for you lovely people listening, you listen to my wonderful voice and learn about the podcast this way. So what do we think? Do you think she was lucky? I mean, I think she probably had a pretty decent life. I think she, on the grand scheme of things, she wasn't beheaded. She technically wasn't divorced. She outlived Henry. She lived a pretty decent life, even under a Catholic ruler on Mary I. That's another thing. I mean, that could have gone south very, very quickly. Mary didn't get the nickname Bloody Mary for no reason. So it is entirely plausible that she could have had a pretty bad time after Henry died. But she didn't. She survived. She had a good life, lots of money, lovely houses, servants, beautiful clothes. And she didn't have to deal with the king. So, all in all, a pretty good life there. So, we move on next week to the second beheading of Henry VIII, or the second beheading of a wife. Maybe not the second beheading. I don't even think Anne Boleyn was the first beheading. But I can't remember. There is a number of how many people were actually executed under Henry VIII. It's a rather high number. But we shall see you next week. Thank you all for listening. Just a quick shout out before we go. I've had a fantastic donation on the GoFundMe. I mean, we set this up a few weeks ago, just to essentially try and raise some money just to help us buy new equipment for the podcast. And I want to give a big shout out to Craig. You know who you are. I'm not going to put your surname on here, but Craig, thank you very much for your deposit. There is no limit. Anything you want to donate is going into a fund. So I really, really appreciate that. And, you know, obviously, Craig, you've put quite a lot across. So, that's fantastic. And I really, really appreciate that. Every donation is super, super appreciated. The link is on the Facebook group. Get yourselves over there. If you can't do that, any support that you can give us in regards to liking, subscribing, sharing, really, really important as well. Get this podcast out to as many people as you can. And if you want to, you can also join our Patreon. That starts at $5 a month. There's no limit. You can pay as much or as little as you want for that. You get access to all these shows early. Then you also have access to quite a few shows that are on there that have not been aired on the normal podcast. We have a gangsters episode on there, which covers some of the most famous gangsters in history. That is not on the normal feed. That is only on there. So get yourselves over there. It's really, really worth it. And $5 a month helps to grow the podcast. So thank you very much, guys. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths and sometimes heights to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.